Good evening, morning, afternoon. This is Daryl War for April 2021. Just letting you know what's going on. Not a whole lot, at least not with the pit. I have been trying to work on it, mostly with the Madam Finley episodes. But in other news, I still love having my sweetheart at home. I have lost track of how many beards he's had. I want to say 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. Maybe 13, that'd be a lucky number. Yeah, my in-laws, especially for holidays and my birthday, bringing buckets of food, which we've been going through. They're pretty good buckets of food. It's a lot. I mean, that's why I say when we couldn't see so much of Clover and Jonah anymore, I wrote them a letter and I said, yeah, they brought us buckets of food, basically. Back in early 2020. Yeah, we've been kind of amused. Me and a pen friend. Been kind of amused at this whole, oh, everybody's going to go back to normal. Meaning, you know, less worried about the virus and less social distancing. And I'm just like, excuse me. There are some of us, pen friends mostly, some of us who are waiting for another normal to go back to. And it's the one we've been waiting to go back to since 2015. Before a lot of our loved ones and friends got hooked to the social networks and the gadgets and the smartphones and being predicted and then manipulated with those predictions via these companies. And my pen friend on the phone said, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I have been waiting for that since at least 2015, if not earlier. So I just wanted to put that out there for a show. Because, yeah, you want to go back to normal? We have been wanting to go back to another normal for a whole lot longer, and we're very doubtful we'll see that normal again. She also had told me a number of months ago, because I had been explaining to her about the Marina Sirtis interview on Mission Log, back in 2015, actually, if I'm remembering that accurately, it started with Marina Sirtis saying, I'm taking a break from social media, you know, that kind of thing. And her and the host trying to figure out what was wrong with people, and Marina Sirtis was saying that it brings out the worst in people, but then the host was trying to say, and I've seen this a lot of times, oh, it's just the worst people. Oh, those bad people. And Marina Sirtis started to agree with the host, and I was saying that, you know, I think, you know, I wasn't there, obviously, but I'm always thinking about it because it's gotten me through a lot of tough years, that it is a little bit of both. And my pen friend that I mentioned earlier, she's all, it is both. It is both. It is bringing out the worst in people and giving the worst people a platform to express their hideousness. It's both. Very emphatic, she was saying, just as well as with a few other things that we talk about. Then we were having some fun in the most recent telephone call. I was going on about how I was having these troubles trying to get more romance going with Professor Stokes and Dr. Hoffman, and then she started thinking about Doctor Who, and she was saying, oh, what about the girl doctor? I'm like, wait, what girl doctor? The lady, you know, and oh, you mean Doctor Who, Jodie Whittaker? She's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I like her. I mean, I'm watching more Tom Baker. Me and my husband are watching more Tom Baker. I mean, that's, and she's all, I know, because you got a lot on your plate. You don't have time for everything, or even a slice of anything more than what you're dealing with. But I was like, yeah. And then she was able to hear what my husband was saying, and because I was telling her that, yeah, he keeps abreast of a lot of Doctor Who way better than I can, and that she was wondering if the Jodie Whittaker doctor was good, bad, what did we think? And I said, I liked what I saw. I didn't see much, but I liked what I saw. And my husband said, well, it's been hit or miss for a lot of years. There's some really good ones, and there's some really bad ones, and it's been that way for a while. And I think I went back to, well, you know, because Tennant, a lot of his episodes as the doctor were so good, and so my husband piped up and she heard what he said, where he had said, yeah, the first year with Matt Smith that he really liked a lot. But ever since after that first year with Matt Smith, it's been up and down. It's been like really bad, really good, really bad, really good, and bits in between. But he said the first year with Matt Smith, and I asked, did you catch that? And she said, yeah. So there was that loveliness. And we had a lot of chuckles, too, because she was like, what is it with people? They always need this group to hate. And I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, it keeps going back to the Doctor Who villains. They get so repetitive. And I talked about this with my auntie, too. It's like, you want to conquer the galaxy. And my auntie says, and you have no plan of what to do with said galaxy once you get it. What are you going to do with it? Okay, you're going to take over the galaxy, get rid of all the other species, all the other races, and then what? What are you going to do? Just own it. That's it. You have no plans. You know, there's nothing there. Just dominance. That's it. Okay. But not okay, because it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, me and my pen friend, and we're just talking about just the absurdity of, like, well, yeah. And that's why I always go back, and I think I told her this in the telephone conversation, what is happiness? You know, that goes back to, let's answer this question before we go ripping apart the world to try and, well, I want happiness. Well, you better find out what it is before you go ripping apart the world to get it. And we had another good discussion where I say that it gets hard for me to believe that people want what me and my husband have together. And I said, but you don't, because you have it with your husband. She's like, I know, you know, it really has been so nice. And I know when you've thought about it, I've thought about it too, where, wow, this is what it's like. You know, I got to get used to this. This is what it's like to actually have a stable relationship. And we don't need any drama because the outside world gives us more than enough. Working out the problems and just having a best friend that you're close to in that way. That isn't wonderful. Yes, it is. Yeah, just having a wonderful time. But I think I had also told her, going back to Doctor Who, that when the series was coming back before Chris Eccleston, there was talk and rumors and, oh, we're going to bring Doctor Who back. Okay. And it was so long ago before Chris Eccleston. And me and another friend were sitting at a diner so many years ago. And we both came up with someone famous. Of course, you never hire somebody to play the Doctor on Doctor who already is famous, because basically the idea, or at least the idea has been, however many regenerations there have been, is the person becomes famous by becoming the Doctor on Doctor Who. You don't hire somebody famous to begin with. Unless Hartnell was. I don't know if he was. Or anyone that I can recall before Tom Baker. So me and this friend, many years ago, were sitting at a diner, and we both said two different names at the same time. And mind you, it was a long time ago. We were much younger. I said Haley Mills, he said Judi Dench, and we said it simultaneously, so we had to repeat ourselves slowly, you know, so only one of us was talking at a time. So yeah, I said Haley Mills, he said Judi Dench, and neither happened. But, oh, wouldn't it have been fun? So, yeah. And other than that, just getting back into audiobooks, I was really just needing some relaxation time, and I found myself going back to LibriVox and tuning into a reading of Jane Eyre by Elizabeth Klett. I was just looking for somebody British reading it, and really was like, wow, I can actually enjoy this story and not have any Dark Shadows flashbacks. Because I'd had that problem when I was going to start the podcast and the radio drama in audio. And I was like, I gotta stop thinking about this. And I tried to flip on Jane Eyre, the one from, I think, the 70s with Timothy Dalton. And it was just dreadful because I hear Rochester's wife screaming upstairs and, oh, hi, Jenny. You know, I was just, oh, or other things that remind me of Victoria Winters. And I was like, I can't watch this. I gotta make my show. So recently, I had better luck with the audio book of Jane Eyre, without any Dark Shadows flashbacks, just getting into the story, and wonderful reading. And I got to vent with Melissa about some of the characters. Like, I love this, and Rochester's so cool, we go on about that. And I said, it was so funny, too, because I know that Dark Shadows had a lot of influence from old books, and Jane Eyre being a very key one. And I have long understood, gotten the impression, been pretty darn confident that Roger Collins was loosely based on Rochester from Mr. Rochester from Jane Eyre. Just the sarcasm, especially. And then I realized, oh my gosh, Mr. Rochester's first name is Edward. And that's another character that Louis Edmonds, who played Roger, played in the 1890s. I went, oh my gosh, maybe that's why they named him Edward. I don't know. And it's like, oh, man. So just little things like that. It weren't huge Dark Shadows flashbacks, but it's like, oh, wait, I think that makes sense in this way that I hadn't thought about either before or in a long time. And then I had a wonderful time talking on the phone with Melissa, just saying, oh, my gosh, St. John, the cousin of Jane Eyre, all that arguing. I've just been wanting to vent to somebody. I would have run off back to Thornfield, not knowing, to the scariness of what had happened there, just to get away from St. John pressuring me to marry him. I would have run away too. It's like, man, you're so insistent, just to get away from all that arguing. It's like, oh, get a mail order bride, dude. Just, oh, he was getting on my nerves. But most of the time, I was like, it's great to sleep to because it's just Jane and Mr. Rochester talking. That's most of what that book is. And then she was talking about the Timothy Dalton version because she knows that pretty well. Whereas I know a little bit more the William Hurt and Joan Plowright as Mrs. Fairfax. But we both realized that it was very likely, because I said, I can't remember exactly, but I feel like the most in a visual production that was made of the gypsy scene where Rochester's pretending to be a fortune teller was the Timothy Dalton BBC. So we were just going on and on about Jane Eyre, and just because I've been listening to the book, and then that got me going with more audiobooks, and I really had to hunt for some nights, found my copy of The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, read by David Warner, that I'd been so in love with years ago, and I'm like, I've got to have that somewhere here. And I finally found it, and I just turned it on. I would not stop it. And the thing about The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, David Warner reading it, thank you very much. If you ever hear this, doubt you will. It's wonderful. The first half of the book is what I like. I'd almost call that fluff, or spooky fluff. Whereas the second half, it's like everything's getting weird, you're not quite sure why. And I fell asleep and I woke up to the ending and I'm like, oh man, no wonder. I wouldn't have wanted to go back to that miserable life. You know, whatever the protagonist had before. I mean, Hill House, at least the first part of the book, that was the glory and the dream for that lady. Like, really, for some reason, her and the other chick that she made friends with, it's like, it was so much fun. They were just palling around and joking. And yeah, there was a little bit of the spooky, and then later you're just not sure where this twisted tale is going. It almost seemed like the haunted shack or, you know, one of those places, the mystery spot, one of those places where gravity doesn't seem to work quite right, but it all makes sense if you know what the tricks are. So other than that, yeah, it's just like the first half of The Haunting of Hill House seems like something good's gonna happen, but then it doesn't. So I just have to figure out where is the point at which The Haunting of Hill House gets bad for me, because there's a lot in the first half that I love. Same goes with The Craft. If it was a two-reel movie, I would like the first reel. So that is what's going on there. And then, of course, I've been listening to Kara Schallenberg's reading of Johanna Spivey's Heidi as well, and that's been enjoyable. And just chilling out, trying to get back. A lot of books, a lot of those things that I love. And that's what I've been spending a lot of time doing, even though I do want to try and get to episode 24. Because I realize if I get to The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, episode 24, I'll start working back on the audio of 23. Although I do have some equipment issues, and heaven knows if I'm ever going to finish 23, much less the whole series in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. But yeah, just getting to that, just looking around for a little help here and there, hoping for the best. And so yeah, trying to work on 24. In fact, I was trying to get some help with Hoffman and Stokes, to a certain degree, because, yeah, I did put a drabble up for Professor Stokes, and it probably had too many things that were inspired by other things, and just trying to get a little drabble going, because there's so little of Professor Stokes and Dr. Hoffman romance out there. I was like, I want to get something going. And Oisin lovingly reviewed it, and I knew that it had a lot of problems, and I'm still working on it. I even remember the summary going, you know, there's way too much of this, that, and the other thing. This needs to be rewritten. I'm just going to leave it up now. And I asked Elena, I was like, you know, I would like some help with this, if at all possible, because I know you were interested in the idea. We had already had discussions through the years over the Julia Barnabas thing, because Elena is a bona fide fan of it. She likes other non-canon pairings. She knows that that one is a non-canon pairing. She knows that Barnabas did not reciprocate during the show to Dr. Julia Hoffman. But we have had a lot of fun understanding each other and letting each other talk about it. And I've been on the phone with Elena at times just saying, hey, you know, if you saw me blowing a gasket, I want to let you know. It's because so-and-so was blowing a gasket at me, and then by that time, Elena's just cracking up, and I'm cracking up. Yeah, you know, because that's the thing about the Julia Barnabas non-canon romance, is that Elena enjoys it, and there are other people who enjoy it, but all of these problems with the insecurity that gets infused in people from social media and from other things, it just makes it so unenjoyable for all involved. some of us just want to ignore it because it's not our cup of tea. There are other people who love it because it is their cup of tea. And then there's all these other people who are making a big stink and blowing gaskets at people who really don't care and don't want to care because they need to proselytize somebody else over it, and that's not the point. So me and Helena have talked about it, and I really appreciate that. I appreciate that she's very grounded and very sober about the whole thing. And laughing when I say, well, you know, you saw me blow a gasket. Well, the reason for that is, and da-da-da-da-da. And it makes me want to say, okay, guys, the people who are upset about Julie Barnabas not happening, just keep fighting with the Angelique Barnabas people who are also upset for whatever reason. And leave the rest of us out of it. Just leave the rest of us out of it. And, you know, I was also thinking, you know, maybe this is why the Roxanne Barnabas fans are so aloof and so chill. Because they know that, in a lot of regards, they're not taken seriously by anyone else. So they're like, ah, we're safe, because nobody cares. They don't take us seriously. So, as we were, I was asking her, because I know that I described in, I think, the last gasket I blew about this subject, was that I actually influenced Helena to write Complications, which is a Julia Barnabas romance story. However, it was an alternate universe. It was a situation where Hoffman and Stokes had already been married, and Nicholas Blair came in early, and so it was similar, same characters, basically, but it was a very different situation. I had helped with that because I had these notes in Margaret Set to Pray, Chapter 8, these ones at the ends where I say, you know, these are my three examples of how it wouldn't matter, how Dr. Hoffman wouldn't have any romantic designs on Barnabas Collins and easily placed. And for some reason, that inspired Helena to write Complications. And I went through it partway. There were things that I definitely liked. Helena's just a great writer. That's all there is to it. She loves books. She loves reading. She loves writing. You know, she's just dynamite that way. But it isn't every story in the world that I appreciate from her that I can read all the way through, because some of it's not my cup of tea, and some of my stuff isn't her cup of tea. But there were elements that I really liked with the Hoffman-Stokes pairing, which was in there in bits. And so, since I had problems with Angel of Mercy, which was the drabble I wrote for Hoffman and Stokes, Stokes in first person, I think, I was trying not to look at it because I knew it was off after I posted it. And I know that it needs a rewrite. So I asked her, are there parts of Complications that maybe I haven't read that I could get inspired by for Hoffman and Stokes? And she got back to me about that. And I think she said it was Chapter 9, Chapter 13. And then that got her rereading Complications and other things she had written. And she's like, I really enjoy this. Good. That's the point, is to enjoy it and be fulfilled and have fun. You know, escapism. I've been saying for years. So I need to look into that because, yeah, I need more help because I work with Professor Stokes and I know he has feelings for Dr. Hoffman. It's just that they didn't go very far on the Dark Shadows program. Although I remember Taryn years ago saying, did anybody watch House of Dark Shadows? She was telling me this. Did somebody not watch House of Dark Shadows? He was deeply concerned about Dr. Hoffman in that movie. So you have that too, where you can kind of tell, and it's just difficult to watch all of House of Dark Shadows by yourself, at least for me. Oh, I would love to get to that. Maybe I can have that little segue right there. So yeah, since the topic's up, I've been meaning to do this for a while, and my pen pal said that it would be cool if I read some of her notes from House of Dark Shadows, and she said, you know, in May of 2019, I think you were a little too apologetic of me enduring this movie. I mean, it was not the best movie in the world, but it was not the worst movie in the world either. Okay, well, I was also being a little facetious, too. I'm just like, oh, I am so sorry, because I thought you were going to watch the 2012 movie, not the 1970. I mean, even, oh, I love what Autumn said when I first talked to her on Skype. The way she said it was just wonderful and young person. I got it very quickly. When I said, do you know Dark Shadows? She said, yes, I've seen the movie. And the disturbing 1970s version of the movie. And I loved that because the 1970s, obviously it's earlier, but I like that, you know, she kind of legitimized 2012 Dark Shadows when she's compared it to and the disturbing 1970s version of the movie.
That is so many good memories amidst all the chaos and horror. Our lives now. So, my pen friend, in watching House of Dark Shadows, I gotta find some gems here of her notes as she endured the movie. The movie just drops you into it, doesn't it? Bit disconcerting for people who have never seen the TV show. I would be even more confused if I didn't have Daryl's podcast. I recognized the creepy opening music. I appreciated seeing the characters slash actors, although they weren't really how I envisioned them. I would never have thought miniskirt dresses for costuming, although probably should have given the era filmed. And that she had, I guess, imagined that Willie Loomis was older looking. The lack of transition scenes slash explanations, suddenly a party, is a bit hard to get to. Maggie Evans is very sparkling. That's a good one. And this is a good explanation, because she says, I am totally a movie snob, and you know it. I don't normally watch soap operas or camp movies or horror movies of any kind, so this is really just not shaping up well for me. Because, yeah, she's got certain standards, and this isn't her usual forte. And that was one of the reasons I was worried. I totally thought she was going to watch the other film. 30 minutes in. Pause to see how much longer this is. So, yeah, she was having some difficulties with some of the details and where things are in relation to each other as far as, like, physical structures, housings, and so forth. And then she just kind of says, so Willie Loomis is Igor, basically. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I think everyone is reacting very calmly, and everyone has also, rather amusingly, quickly accepted they're being hunted by vampires. And then she apologizes to me because she felt that she had to start fast-forwarding because there were things that just were not moving quickly enough and not interlacing enough and not making enough sense for her. Yeah, this seems very apt. The time passes unexpectedly and without apparent rhyme or reason. Were they condensing the entire TV series into this one movie? Well, and I'm pretty sure I did explain to her, no, it was just bits of the show that they were trying to condense into one very simple story. And I might have let her know that, you know, part of it was Dan Curtis wanted to see what it would be like if Barnabas had been the Marauder and it had turned out maybe what he was shooting for in the television show that changed because of the nature of a soap opera anyway. And that's what always surprised me about the later incarnations of Dark Shadows, is that what I'd read about House of Dark Shadows is that Dan Curtis was so sure, like, I finally got to do what I wanted to with this vampire, with Barnabas, and nobody stopped me. And then he went years later. I think he did the Jack Palance Dracula film, and then also 91 Revival, and 2004 Pilot for WB that never aired. So, obviously, he was thinking a lot about it over the years. And things changed. But yeah, I think with House of Dark Shadows, that's why I was kind of surprised. I was like, well, you know, you were so happy with the results of this. How come it kind of kept going into those similar directions that the TV show went as you made newer incarnations and all that? Because it sounded like he cared about where that was going. And then as she's watching House of Dark Shadows, my pen pal says, oh, a music box. Daryl said something about a music box. I like Maggie's costume when she's at the restaurant. Dr. Julia is hurt and jealous. Naturally, when you try to cure or kill a vampire and take away his powers, he's going to age and go crazy and start biting people. I mean, it's just really a bad idea. And then she points out the actor who plays Maggie's boyfriend, Jeff, looks vaguely familiar. I thought maybe I'd seen him in some other TV show, but the actor's name was unfamiliar when I got to the credits. So Maggie becomes a vampire too in the movie. And now, for some reason, we're off to a misty island. Yeah, I mentioned that in another podcast, that was the one thing that I remembered from this set of notes. I am finding this movie both hard to follow between scenes and also easy to predict within scenes. Yeah, I thought that was like, wow, yeah, I mean, she really does watch a lot of movies. So I value some of these reflections. Oh, it's got lots and lots of cobwebs. So Jeff becomes the chief vampire killer. This is very reminiscent of Dracula, what with the lot of the imperiled girl mounting up and impaling people. Some of the sets are fun. That's some very bright blood you've got there. It really was, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't like ketchup, but yeah, it was really bright. You know, I think I had kind of a bloody, you know, that fake blood that's like really sticky. I don't know if they still make it, but yeah, I had some of that in
the early 90s, I want to say. Maybe it was the late 80s, but yeah, it was really sticky. And it was pretty dark, and it was a lot better than the stuff they used in House of Dark Shadows. And it was for a Halloween costume. But oh, that stuff was sticky. Oh, our vampire hunter, she says, has been successfully mesmerized. Good thing. Willy isn't dead yet. Oh, perfect. A slow-mo final attack. Then she says, okay, so I didn't particularly enjoy this movie, clearly, but I did appreciate the chance to try it, and it does give me a better sense of the Dark Shadows universe. It reminded me of some of the horror movies that I've seen with Vincent Price, only without the benefit of Price. This movie must have had a very restricted budget, but I think they probably should have paid for better writing. I can understand how some people might well enjoy it, but the whole soap opera horror genre, if it is a genre on its own, is just not one I'm interested in particularly, and to me, if you're not already a fan, this movie won't convince you to change your mind, at least not mine. However, now that I have a slightly better understanding of where the universe and characters of your podcast radio drama series came from, I feel this will enhance my appreciation for what you're doing with it. And even though I came away unimpressed by Dark Shadows the movie, I do fully intend to continue progressing through the pit. I feel a bit guilty. I can't tell you I love this movie, but must proceed in the belief you prefer honest feedback over insincere flattery. And yeah, you know, for someone who just is not a Dark Shadows fan, she's got it. I mean, somebody who's a very avid film fan, that's good. And also, yeah, I wanted people who are interested in the pit. She's interested in radio drama. She's interested in fun. Yeah. And that seemed to be, I really appreciated that just for the sake that she says, you know, honesty over insincere flattery. And that was what so many people were giving me because they didn't seem to understand anything else. It was all about like clicks and popularity and stuff like that. I had no idea why that was happening. I do now. But yeah, she got it right just for the sake that, yeah, the insincere flattery. It's like, if you're not interested, then what did I say in Melissa's interview? Then go away. I don't need to deal with you. We don't need to encounter each other. We can go. Life is too short. Like I have said multiple times, if somebody's bothering you to listen to the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows because they think it's the best thing ever, come to me, tell me who's bothering you, how to get in touch with them, and I personally will ask them to stop bothering you because I don't believe in that stuff. I want people who are interested to get in touch with me. Not rushing off to third parties to gossip about me. Not rushing off to find out the worst about everybody else, not the Weekly World News version of all of us, because somebody else is making money off of that. We're not. Wouldn't it be nice if we all got payback for all the grief we've been through? Yeah, it'd be great. But I really don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, insincere flattery. That just seemed like the order of the day if you weren't getting hate speak and hate threads and all that other garbage. Yeah, so that's one of the reasons that it's like, yeah. She gave it a go. I thought she was going to watch Dark Shadows 2012. I think she would enjoy Dark Shadows 2012. Tito is about as much of a movie snob. He really has a hard time enjoying a lot of films. He enjoyed Dark Shadows. So, you know, our old friend Tito. He really had a lot of high standards. And for some reason, the Dark Shadows movie got it. He's like, I really enjoyed it. He doesn't enjoy a whole lot of movies where he'd not necessarily heartily endorse them to everyone on the planet. It's more like, I enjoyed this, he was saying. So hopefully she will see that one someday. And boy, it would be great to hear her potential comparisons between House of Dark Shadows and Dark Shadows 2012. I would love that. Okay, let's see what we've got for episode 24, which I've barely been working on. I knew that I'd have to get at least some of the rough draft, or most of it done, to be able to get myself to work on the audio for 23, because I already, you know, I wasn't going to keep the demo for Pit 23 up. It was initially a testing maneuver, but I decided, I'll just leave it up. My phone friend liked it a lot. She's like, I'd like to hear more of you and your husband talking back and forth and some of these demos and stuff. And I have that potentially for this podcast too. So I'd like to get through and then maybe have that 20-minute segment of something I have that's really special I found from 2013 before I got the audio recordings started. So, yeah, working with Madame Finley was funny because me and Helena were talking about Madame Finley, and I was talking about that with my auntie too. I was like, I think the title I want is Madame Finley Gets Bored. Kind of like Captain Gray Gets Bent, Madame Finley Gets Bored. And I discussed a lot of ideas I had years ago with Oisin. And she's like, I love what you got. I love what you got where, you know, she gets bored And if she gets on the horn with Quentin, she says, I think you need an analyst more than a medium.
Oshin was telling me, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. If she's a medium and she works with ghosts all the time, this doesn't make any sense that she would, like, get so scared and then die because she got scared to death or whatever. And, yeah, I guess we left off in 23 of the faux-injured Roger getting taken to his room and all these things happen. But it'd be different reasons that Madame Findlay comes into the pit than she comes into Dark Shadows because, as we heard in the demo for 23, it's because Professor Stokes and Dr. Hoffman are getting fed up with the fact that going into whatever past life memories they possibly can, which Julia doesn't want to do, but she finally agrees to it, they're just not getting anything. And it makes a lot of sense. I said in a log entry that the past is in flux. And if you watch 1897, that pretty much says it. There's so much fluctuation. And how could all of these turn-of-the-screw things be happening in the 1960s while all this 1897 crap's going on that it happened or whatever? I mean, it just doesn't add up. So you figure the past is somehow in flux. And that's what I figure in the pit, Madame Findlay's going to figure out, that the past is in flux, so we can't get all the substantial answers. And the great thing, and I was telling Helena this too, is I was so angry about Kitty Soames, but now I'm so glad I incorporated her early. Because in that way, Maggie would have a lot more knowledge somehow before a lot of other people might. Yeah. I'd also let Helena know that as I was working with what notes I had accumulated over the years, what ideas I had come up with, I had had this hypothetical discussion between Chris Jennings getting a room and maybe the Shriners leaving. And I thought, you know, it's been too long. You know, they already had their parade in episode 17. So I transposed that discussion into one that Mr. Wells would have with Madame Findlay. And, of course, I've got to have Madame Findlay. I mean, I just got to go with the jokes where she's predicting all these things before they happen, or she wants to predict them before they're said. Because that's how she is on Dark Shadows. Don't tell me anything. Oh, but if we take that a step further, she's going to be like, hey, I already know. And she's going to be confusing people with, do this. So with Mr. Wells, what I have so far is that she wanders into the Consponent. And Mr. Wells asks, what can I do for you? And she says, the phone is about to ring. And Wells asks, will I want to answer it? And she says, yes, it will be some former guests. The ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the mystic shrine. So yeah, Mr. Wells answers it, and it is, and he, you know, figures it out, and then, you know, goes on about, like, well, the damages were this, and this is what I was told, and maybe you owe me this, maybe you owe the town this. And I've got to work on a little bit of this, because I do want Mr. Wells to warn her, because Sam, who has already been saved earlier, also did his bit in passing it forward to Mr. Wells. Don't go up there. You know, we always say in all the horror, don't go up there, stupid, or don't go down there, stupid. Go through that door. No. So Sam tells Mr. Wells that he actually does it for the pit. So Mr. Wells is kind of passing it forward to Madame Findlay. Hey, don't let him scare you. I know you don't want to hear or have anything given away, but what I tell you is not going to bother anything. Keep a good sense of humor about you and you'll do fine. She says, I aim to, Mr. Wells, surely. And then Professor Stokes comes in and gets her for the rendezvous, and they all kind of nod to each other before they leave. And then I've got to add more turn-the-screw stuff with Amy and David. And there's a bit, you know, because previously in Dark Shadows it had been Elizabeth and Madame Findlay. And so initially, Roger gives off a kind of sarcastic impression that he is in disbelief. And she asks him, Mr. Collins, you don't really believe in the occult, do you? And Roger says, me? I live in this house. What more do you want? She says, most people don't believe in it, in the supernatural, until they have been driven to it, as you have been, by facts they can explain in no other way. And Roger tells Madame Findlay, oh, on the contrary, I delight in explaining it in any other way possible, then I grant myself even more delight in the idea that it all just as may be ghosts. Roger explains to her that a lot of things happen in the drawing room of the great house and throughout the ages in the family, and Madame Findlay tells him, I'd like to be alone in this room, if you don't mind. Roger says, not at all. I'd like to be alone in general. I shall leave you to it. And Madame Finley, just like in the original show, but of course Roger has other words. Madame Finley says, "There is a curse on this house." Roger scoffs knowingly. "Groundbreaking news, madam. I'll be sure to inform the papers for the upteenth time." Then he shuts the door. And then there's some stuff with Amy and Madame Finley that I haven't quite finished yet. But the basic idea of, oh gosh, there's some Adam's Family stuff kind of salted in here in my notes. But yeah, I got to get her into that room. I don't know if that's going to be 24. I figure it's going to be 24, but I also figure I got to get more Adam's Family and more Elizabeth and Lily on the boat stuff, too. But for the most part, for my notes, when Madame Finley gets locked in the room, she's just going to get fed up. And even, you know, when my husband and I were watching, she's like, "I'm not going to die." And I instantly heckled. It's like, no, what she would naturally say is, "What, I'm going to die?" Well, we all do eventually. She'd know that. I gotta find some way to put that in here. Yeah, she just gets fed up with the breathing on the phone. But she also, when she gets on the horn with Quentin's supposed ghost, she says, "This is a relic of a telephone and the cord is cut. Oldest trick in the book, if there is a book." Well, now that I have you on the line, as it were, what do you need? When I relate a lot of this to O'Sheen years ago, she was like, "I love what you've got for her. I would definitely love to hear her say all that to creepy Quentin instead of getting scared to death by him, as happens on the show," which never made that much sense to me, really. I mean, if the gal is a medium and so used to talking with ghosts, etc., why would she get scared to death by one? I guess it's supposed to highlight for us how very intensely bad and scary old Quentin is, but it has always seemed a little implausible to me. And O'Sheen had asked years ago, "What I'm wondering, though, is what you're going to introduce as a means of making sure that it happens the way we want it to, not as it does on the show. Since she does apparently get scared to death by him on the show, what are you going to introduce as some different event that changes the path of subsequent events and means that she doesn't get scared to death?" Well, obviously, we have this phone conversation that I showed O'Sheen. And then, I let her know on the actual phone with O'Sheen Naboy who will get her out of the room. And of course, since I haven't gotten 23 done, haven't released 22, among a zillion other things I gotta do, I'm not gonna tell you. I've told O'Sheen, but I'm not gonna tell you all who gets Madame Finley out of that room. But somebody very helpful does. Oh, and this is good. O'Sheen had told me, "It's fun to imagine that she gets stuck in this amazingly long phone conversation with him as he tells her the story of all his woes, and she's sinking lower and lower in the chair, rolling her eyes and muttering about how he needs an analyst, not a medium." But that still wouldn't get her out of the locked room. Unless maybe you have this very long phone conversation going on and eventually David and Amy come and let her out of the room. Somehow maybe Quentin just forgets to keep the door magically locked because by now he's so into telling Janet all about his many sorrows. But yeah, she had wanted to know who gets Madame Finley out of the room. And I did tell her quite a while back. Oh, she was, the idea with that O'Sheen had was when the little panel opens. Finally, Mr. Collins, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I really have to run. Here's the phone number for a very qualified psychoanalyst. Ah, okay. What I was explaining to Helena about Madame Finley in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, as opposed to in Dark Shadows where she dies very quickly, I told Helena, what I anticipate as I build is Madame Finley will figure out this is more of a case of anguished echoes than human spirits. In Dark Shadows, she is wanting to give the spirits rest and relief, but when we look over the data, it's not likely this is the spirit of Quentin at all. The past is in flux, there's more going on with Quentin and his past, and even Samantha and Endora know Angelique has a stay in the 1890s at some point. So, the characters can determine that protection is important, but the main solution is finding out why this rift is forming from the past. I am gratefully a big step ahead, having added Kitty Soames early. Thank you, Lady Hampshire. Maggie is already recognizing stuff she knows from back then that isn't on record. And that was one of O'Sheen's questions in episode 21, because in episode 21 of The Pit, Maggie sort of loses track of the present and talks about, she's irritated that Chris is just denying all this stuff. And when asked a question, he's responding with another question, and she says, that's exactly what Angelique Bouchard did to me in 1897. I was asking her these questions, and she was responding with another question. Do you think I could be a servant or lady's maid? And just kept dancing around it, and then she says, and then kept playing with that Dandy Lou's hair. And O'Sheen asked me, who's the Dandy Lou? And I was like, well, if you remember at the 1897 time where Angelique was getting Quentin to marry Angelique or whatever was going on at the time, she's like sitting there running her hands through Quentin's hair and he's getting irritated because she doesn't want to answer Kitty Soames' questions. You know, she's just sitting there playing with that. The Dandy Lou is Quentin Collins. But Maggie hasn't quite figured it out yet. And yeah, I figure at some point she'll be going, oh, that guy. Oh, that Dandy Lou. That's the guy. At some point in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. But I had to explain that to Oisin because she picked up on that. Who does Maggie mean when she says that Angelique's playing with that Dandy Lou's hair? It's Quentin Collins. That's what Maggie, Kitty Soames, Josette Dupre is talking about. Then eventually we get more Barnabas when we get to Chris's problems, but I don't think that's going to happen in episode 24. Like I said, I'm not even sure we're going to get Meta Finley into that West Wing room in episode 24. I'm doing an update because people don't re-email me and talk about the damn narrative. You know, been a problem for years. So I was hoping what I could add to this show was something that I found recently as I was searching and hunting for all these audiobooks that accumulated over the years to potentially listen to, and of course I can't listen to them all in one go, but then I was like, oh my gosh, what's this? And it's a recording that I made prior to revising and updating episode 2 in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups, before I got the podcast going. And I was doing all of these additives and telling my husband about them after we both got home from work. I was still working, he was still working, and he is still working, but I'm not because I did this. Wasted a lot of time in my life to find out that the world had gone to hell in a handbasket. But anyway, I wanted to share this recording I made of explaining all of these wonderful additives I made to episode 2 that had to do with making sure there were elements of the original Dark Shadows in there. And of course, this is one of the reasons that when Tingler did his review of episode 2 and the question had been asked, how did the host catch up you or the audience as yourself with what had been missed? And Tingler had responded, the host did a wonderful job of catching us up with the slow, ever so slow original program. And when you listen to this, you can see why. Because there were all of these things we didn't have the box set yet that I was going through and remembering and researching and making sure that I was adding them. And there were parts of the original program that Milgen and Hecubus are explaining that even my husband didn't remember. So hopefully this will be fun, and I might interrupt a little bit just to explain what the next step is in how episode 2 had been revised and expanded. Now remember, this recording took place in the autumn of 2013, and I want you to be forewarned there is going to be some swearing, but I think I only dropped one F-bomb in relation to Wadsworth. Enjoy.
So, in number 2, or in episode 2, it's like, you know, the usual Milligan, good evening, da-da-da-da-da, yellow, manservant, ladies and gentlemen, da-da-da, and Satan, da-da-da-da-da. It has come to my attention that we've presented only a smidgen of evil updates on this program. Too many lovely things have been happening. That is terrible, Master. What kinds of things? Well, to bring our listeners up to snuff, the demise of Jason McGuire before our first episode. That was far too lovely to be believed. Then, of course, our poor Miss Winters was sadly devastated over the demise of her odd engagement choice, Burke Devlin. And yes, I know, what a beautifully evil last name he had! Ah, yes, Master. What a left bummer. I was going to have him say what a right bummer, so I had him say what a left bummer, because that's more sinisterial. And then there was the experiment, as Dr. Hoffman tried to turn Mr. Vampire Collins into a normal man. That this went significantly foul, as he ended up becoming the true age he might be if he was mortal. Do you remember that?
That was just kind of disturbing.
It was totally disturbing, and I go into that quite a bit. It was like, I was trying to figure out, like, where was I when I wrote number 2? And I was like, wait, I've got to, like, catch them up and have Milligan and Hecubus catch them up. So it's going to be a long intro. Ed, Hecubus, aren't you skipping ahead, Master? Aren't you giving away spoilers to those just tuned in? Yes, and that's a little evil, blah, 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 blah. Little bit of evil. Milgen, there are still updates to make in this episode. As an intensely crusty version of a once elegant vampire was getting over the distress. Our Carolyn Stoddard wandered in to discover his coffin and was aggrieved to become his victim. Do you remember that?
Oh, was that when that happened?
Yeah, that's when that happened. However, this was lucky, as her scintillating hemoglobin seemed to give him a true cure for the false one he let himself in for.
Right, right. So was that what rejuvenated him?
Yeah.
Oh, I totally do not remember.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to wear all that makeup for like 5 weeks or whatever, that poor man. He was certainly pleased to halt the endurance of excessive medication he needed to keep going at all. So awful. This show is so awful. Hecubus. My, that's a lot of skipping, Master. Aren't you sure we aren't ready for a peep yet? Well, considering the television show the story is based on is over 1,200 episodes in length and well over 600 hours long, give or take commercials, we do have to work on some augmenting. But what about Barnabas Collins' new butler? How does he fit into all this? Well, I suppose he's mostly shaking his head and putting up with it, unfortunately. But he's a tough old chap. Every time I had the Kindle read that to me, she always said, he's a tough old chapter. Because the chap ended with a period, so I guess she just assumed that it was chapter.
Oh, God!
He's a tough old chapter.
Obviously, chap period is an abbreviation of the word chapter.
Yeah.
Chap is not a word, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
It's a word, you just can't end a sentence with a period.
Yeah. Well, they're working on it, I'm sure. We can still expect better things to come, for some reason that we cannot recall. Many residents of the estate began a seance for the sake of David Collins' troubles. This somehow helped Victoria Winters fall into 1795, and much was learned about why Barnabas Collins became a vampire, as well as a lot of other destructive problems throughout another effusive 94 episodes, or about 39 hours of television watching if you want to get technical. I did the math on this. And then we knew our sweetness. Yes. The woman of total cruelty. The lady with all the tarot cards alight. Didn't she, like, set him on fire or something? Something happened. It's like, oh, look, there's the script on the bed.
Oh, God, yeah.
Our most evil and beloved, Angelique. At last, I've been waiting to drool over this mistress of the deepest dark. Although, it'll be another episode of our show until we get a good look at her. Still, I'm miffed. Why didn't she pick me? I wouldn't mind being a vampire for her. I've got what it takes. I'm both evil and polite. What is it my old bridge partner has that I haven't got? Yes, please, our most evil temptress, just have dinner with him. He's desperate for a date, and I'd like a night off once in a while. But we must press on until that possibility occurs. We enter the house at Collinwood, and a seance is in progress, or rather the tail end of one. And I was going to just shuck off the stuff where Victoria's going, where's Burke, where's Peter? But then I thought, oh no, I got something else for her to say. You know, Victoria, you were right. No, da-da-da-da-da, I'll never wear a turtleneck again, those ropes. Dreadful idea this entire seance is, Roger. Blah, 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 blah. Burke, where's Burke? Oh dear, says Carolyn, must we explain to her all over again that he died in a plane crash? Peter, where's Peter? Peter, Carolyn's like, now who's she talking about? Could be someone from the foundling home, for all I know. And Victoria says, and the Scarecrow! Where is he? I was like, yeah, leave it in, because then you had to put that freaking Wizard of Oz shit in there. Carolyn, now I'm really lost. Elizabeth, that one has just got to be from a book she read. So that's pretty much the only difference there. And so the three ladies go upstairs to Victoria Winter's bedroom whilst Barnabas and Dr. Hoffman adjourn to this library we've never heard of because there was, like, coffee or something. And then, so, shall I start in on the dreaded Dr. Woodard topic and how responsible you were for it? Oh, you really know how to show a girl a good time, Barnabas. Have a biscuit. Da-da-da-da-da. And then the whole chamber pot thing. Would you like to go to the pictures tomorrow night? What? Oh, please, if you want to see Mad Monster Party, you can go by yourself. With all the supernatural ruckus around here, I don't see why you need to watch a movie about it. That's new. And then the blowing bubbles thing. And then you remember Wadsworth, like, says, I'm just keeping the house tidy, and he, like, picks her up over the shoulder, and he starts running up from the dungeon right. And all that stuff. That's almost the same. And then the whole, like, I wasn't going to let you get away with that post-it joke. She said, I've had it with you all. I'm going to bed. Slam. Barbasol. That was quite an interesting feat. I have a hard time believing you really had much concern over my choking her so much. Watcher's like, sir, that choking business is very serious. My picking her up and getting her up the stairs? That was just plain funny. Laughing, all right, yes, it was. Sir, I've made an effort to clean your staring window if you'd like to make use of it. Ah, yes. What? The one you used to bring your young lady to remember you? What are you talking about? Don't try to fool me, sir. I told you, I know enough. Then explain it. Well, here for the beauty of a darkened teal sky and wispy curtains, the lattice frame is solid, and what do you usually think of when you look out of it? Oh yes, Maggie. And then Maggie wakes up, and the whole thing about, like, too much coffee, and I can't get to sleep, and I don't understand why.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because I'm drinking it like crazy. And they just decide to go over there, which didn't make any sense, but now that I've added all this text, it kind of does, where it's like, since they're both depraved, it's like they both want to go over there, and they don't know why. So at this, in episode 2, he's still a vampire, and Wazir's just putting up with his shit. And then they're eventually going to go back there, and Milligan's is back at the old house. Wadsworth like, well, now that you've managed to, and this is going to get serious. Well, now that you've managed to summon her again, perhaps you could do a little explaining while we wait.
Oh?
A few things, sir. I suppose it is just as well that I give her these earrings. Because I mentioned the earrings, but I didn't say how she got them, so I figured Wadsworth's going to give it to her. So I think in the real show, Willie supplants them somewhere, and it's just weird.
I don't even remember how the hell that...
Yeah, I don't know either, but I remember it, and I'm just going, you know, and I was, like, waiting, I'm like, come on, and I was like, you know, the writers realized they should probably do this, and then they realized that the continuity was too hard to set it up against, even though they've already broken so many continuity rules anyway, so they just dropped the subject. Anyway, so Wadsworth talks about supplanting earrings somewhere, and he says, you already said you were going to. But do you understand why, sir? Of course. They were Josette's and likely belonged to someone who resembles her anyway. It's not a worry to me if you insist. No, it is because you never forced her to see them. Or wear them. And what does that mean? It means that all that is in her may form an associative memory with something that has no other troubling memory clouded over it, sir. I see. Why do you want this? Well, you are my employer, sir. And I do wish that, as such, he has what he desires. But peaceably, and not forcibly, if you catch my meaning. If you could do that, it would be good, sir. No, it would be spectacular. Any other unbelievable questions before she arrives? Well, as I've spent some time polishing silver, there is one bit I was interested in. Oh, my cane? How is that compelling to question me about? I think there is a little evidence of Mr. Loomis on it. Care to make a comment, sir? You don't know enough. You know too much. Well, you might calm yourself when you realize I have your better interests in mind. I understand that he may not have been the most superior underling in the course of matters, but have you considered that he was already rather abused to begin with? Which is good to put that in, because that's where 14 ended up, where he says to Willie Loomis, did you ever think that maybe the reason that you turned out so bad is the same reason that this other guy, you know, right. It's like, it's sort of coming full circle when I put this in. He says, a bit. See anything similar in yourself there, sir? Regretfully, oh yes, I'm afraid I do. Yes, so rather than concern yourself with him writing memoirs to betray you, I totally remember that from episodes, don't you think you might have put some credit in his way? All right. How? Well, you will have to come to terms with the fact that, though he was accused of kidnapping Maggie Evans, it wasn't really him alone, was it? Are you trying to catch me out somehow? Are you just queer all around? Thank you for saying it the old-fashioned way, sir. It's been a while since I've heard it. But no, I wouldn't keep your mind on the same lady if I felt she was in any real harm again. And what type of harm do you expect from me? Well, the cane, sir, got a little carried away with something that is meant to help carry you, yes? All right, what difference does it make? Well, beating servants is rather an old concept, you see. You want to make sure you don't give yourself away with how much age you really have acquired, do you? Oh, you mean I shouldn't just withhold my anger for the sake of others? That would be a better reason. But what with your history, I wasn't sure you would find it as practical. the practical reasons appeal to people more. Usual superior assumption of absurd suggestion. It just fits him. Astounding. You do have a way of expressing things, Wadsworth. Suppose now that I've given Miss Winters the music box, that I should take it away and try giving it to Miss Evans again? No, but I believe you ought not to pursue Miss Winters again. Oh, and why is that? Well, although many generations' connection may dispel any real worry over relationships, I still think she is a little too close for comfort in your regard. What do you mean? Do you know something about Miss Winters that would make her family? I only know it's a stronger possibility than anyone realizes. I have been to the main house and seen enough from Mrs. Stoddard to know that she suspects a connection. A very strong connection, sir. So that is a good, like, even though this is just the second episode, that's a good indication of what's going to show up.
A little teaser.
Yeah. Foreshadowing. Yeah, and also a way of saying, like, this is happening, but we're going to put it to a halt. So a very strong connection, sir. And then Barnabas sadly, Cousin Elizabeth, that is an awkward thing to carry. Wadsworth, yes, and it might be nice for you to take off that hypnotizing spell over your cousin Carolyn, sir. I'm sure the kind of awkwardness of being so close to a relative isn't all that light on her shoulders, either. Ah, says Milligan, sometimes the butler really does do it. And now that Dr. Hoffman has had her huff and come back to the main house for a snooze, she really won't get one. As Carolyn needs to interrogate her via Barnabas's request, but then she magically and thankfully loses interest in doing so. Because you remember Carolyn was always like, we've got to get that book and I'm going to go date Tony so I can get it out of the safe and all that shit.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's just all the freaking cards. I'm throwing them on the table. But anyway, Wadsworth had been talking about, like, hey, that's not such a light thing to carry that you got so close to her, because that's just weird, dude. Stop doing that. So Carolyn originally goes to Dr. Hoffman's room at the main house to, like, bug her, but then magically and thankfully loses interest and she decides to talk about something else. And Carolyn says, Dr. Hoffman. And Hoffman is fed up. Oh, you. Trying to win a battle for your cousin again? Maybe you should stop sneaking around Peterson's office and just let it be for once. You know, I think I can now, though I'm not sure why. Oh, that sounds like a trick. No, really, can we just talk? Hoffman, incredulous. In the middle of the night, why not? Don't suppose you brought any cookies to this pajama party? Sighs. Very well. It is your house, after all. I just thought you might give me some solution to feeling rather unwell. You are a doctor, after all. Actually, I'm a never mind. What's the ailment? So it's just like, because there was stuff in the first episode that I added about her being a historian where they're all just like, yeah, historian. And Carolyn says, well, I'd definitely quit bothering you if I wasn't so submerged in Barnabas' own hypnosis, of course. But more to the point, I feel pretty seasick having gotten such a piercing hickey from a relative. Even if he is six generations removed. Well, I don't have a drug for that, but I think we can work something out. However, you really do like that Mr. Peterson, correct? Oh, I suppose so. Well, no. I've always been curious about him, really. That's a good start. Could get unspooked about the other problem by diving into a better relationship. And if Barnabas ever gets any better, maybe he'll finally feel some remorse over the whole thing. Heaven knows there's a lot of things he should already be sorry for. No kidding. Still, I'm not too pleased that my experiment turned him into an overaged walking corpse. Yep, that was rather unpleasant to get close to. Still, in all of this, Carolyn, I must admit, you did come in at the wrong place at the wrong time. Curing him from that experiment? I think I may have come in at the right place at the right time. And I guess blood donation is a thing families do. Though, goodness, I thought I didn't like needles! Well, that's still a worry. I hope the association with him drawing your blood to regain his old... young self. Won't come up if you ever do need to have blood drawn the usual way, or get an injection. That's good to know. But I think I felt better thinking about being at the right place at the right time now. It changes the perspective of the whole thing. By the way, some of that stuff Barnabas told you about his past? Yes. If Victoria did just come out of the past, I'm guessing his story wasn't all that accurate, huh? Why do you say that? I was in her room, and not only did she explain a lot of it half asleep, she explained even more in her sleep. You think he's just gone mad from his own time travel problems? That and being a vampire, there's a duality of major issues. Plus the length of it. It's not like he was in bed for a year or something. I've seen people gone mad from shorter comas.
I'm imagining some cheesy thing now. Vampire Time Traveler! Coming next fall on UPN or whatever those dice, and that doesn't exist anymore.
And see, that's what's so weird about Dark Shadows is that, you know, there are certain elements, I mean, they use everything, of course, but there are certain elements that I'm just like, I didn't know much about this show, but what I was writing, my main vampire started with a B, and he had a little sister that he cared about. She wasn't as much younger, but... And his favorite author is H.G. Wells. His own time travel problems, that and being a vampire, there's a duality of major issues, plus the length of it. It's not like he was in bed for a year or something. I've seen people gone mad from shorter comas. Well, I guess it's all well and good that he's not a mummy or something. That would be pretty shocking. Hoffman. Yes, and I have to wonder, why don't you ever have one of those around here, too? Milligan. The doctor has a point. We've been wondering that as well. Hecubus. Well, there is one in a Dark Shadows paperback. But then we do mostly keep to the TV show here, other than our own inventive alterations. I love these guys speaking for me. And now we return to the old house for a random hangout session between the Evans and their slowly regrown friendship with the old house for whatever reason.
I am not sure why this portion was cut, but it was. So, the thing that was missing was originally in the very old script that was very short for episode 2 in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups. Sam knocked on the door, Wadsworth opened it, and he said, "Shiver my top tails, you're not Willy." And that is why me and my husband are reacting badly to it. And I knew I had to change it, so here we go.
Sam should know better than to say, "Hey, you're not Willy," obviously. Yeah, I gotta fix that.
Oh, shit! Oh my god!
That. I'm glad I didn't finish. I mean, although I probably would have hit it and been like, "Oh crap! Turn off the thing and gotta fix that." I think I just wanted Sam to say, "Shiver my top tails," which is funny because that's something Captain Greg would say. And that's way before I decided to put Captain Greg even in there.
You could just say something like, "Who are you? Shiver my top tails. Who are you?"
Yeah, exactly. I'm not gonna write it now. So Willie did some wall and window maintenance as well as some plumbing. Oh, that's what Maggie's all, "There's a kitchen?" She's all shocked. And then, I don't know what's going on. I gotta change some of this shit. I can't record it all tonight. And then she's remembering, "Oh, hey, the old porcelain service. You recognize the dishes? Of course, you must have had me over at some point in the last few months. That must be it." I gotta change all this. "Miss Evans, may I ask your assistance with the crumpets?" She was trying to get her out of the room somehow. "Oh, you need help with something? That's a surprise. I suppose I'll see about it just to find out what I could do to improve any tasks you have." Because Wadsworth is a fucking genius. So, when does he never ever need any help? Steps, door flapping. "It's a matter of lemon curd or jam, madam. Any preference?" "You could have just asked me that." "Well, I suppose you have some inkling that I've wanted a private moment. You haven't got that much of an interest in me, surely?" "Not in that way, mademoiselle. However, there is something an old friend wished to bestow upon you. Unfortunately, it has to remain a secret from who it came. But I can assure you that secret isn't me." "Oh, anything else I should know about it? It may conclude some of the odd recollections you've been having trouble with, or at least spark them. However, I ask you not to open this case until you arrive in your own room at home in these late hours." "Don't tell me. I'll open it and it'll spring out like a joke can of peanut brittle." Chuckling. "Perhaps. All right, thank you. Anyway, how about we keep it honest, what we've really discussed?" "Oh? Yes. Jam, please." Instead of lemon curd?
"Knowing. Very good, madam." Steps. "Mazelle." And then the Miss Cleo scene, and that's it. So I guess I still have stuff to work on with this one. Especially the frickin' "You're not Willy." I mean, I gotta get rid of that shit.
So that is all for the revised episode 2 pseudo-demo. And that is the end, pretty much, of your spoiler cast update in April 2021. And between 2013 and 2021, yeah, it's about 8-9 years. overall. At least I understand why it's been taking so long and why time has slowed down so severely much. However, if you are interested and want to get in touch with me to get this show motivated a little further, or just want to talk about it, or just want to talk Dark Shadows, or The Addams Family, or all the other shows I'm using, please email xoiscythe@hotmail.com. And I hope you are staying safe and are doing well, and take care.